We're live. What's up, CPAC? We're back with Tribe Talk, the uncensored effing version of Shiza.
We're going to talk hella shice.
Hella shice about Blue Cross and its new policy in Georgia of not paying for non-urgent emergency department visits. Now, if you look at the article, you can look in the comments there, and people raised all hella hell because they were like, look, you don't know when people are sick. This is going to discourage sick people. And then a lot of caregivers were like, motherfuckers bring people in for stupid shit constantly, and we have to deal with it when there's people actually dying. So your coughs and your colds and all that. Now, here is one proposal, right? Which is, and this came up a while back, there was an ER doing it, and I forget it. Someone can pull the article for me, then we're gonna take your comments. What they did was they said, look, if you agree to be seen first by a triage group that includes a doc, and they tell you, look, there's nothing to be done, you're fine, go home, see your primary, we won't charge you a damn thing. But if you decide you want to be seen in the ER part, you could get a big bill, whether or not it's, you know, emergency. And if you be seen by these other guys and they determine you need to go straight back, they'll send you straight back. So this, I thought, was an interesting way to modify behavior without necessarily penalizing people. So people could decide, okay, you're going to be seen by a doc either way, you're going to be triaged, but do you, you know, if it's non-urgent, you can get them out of there. Now, you need the staffing to do that and the support to do that. But telling people that they're just not going to be covered, because how do they know up front? A lot of people don't have the education. We need to do a better job. We need to improve primary care. All right, let's see.
Chris Miller says, yo, ZPAC, let's get our swear on. Shit yeah, bitch!
Hell yeah!
Shiza.
Shiza. As a career paramedic, says Joseph Brigandi. Oh, thank you. It's bugging him because he's that guy.
Audio doesn't match the video?
Yeah, one person says that. I can't tell you how many times I've had patients go AMA over the fear of costs only to show up later that evening with something far, far worse. This only makes the situation worse. Joseph, this idea that you're trying to avoid care to avoid cost is a dangerous one. They've shown with high deductible plans what people do, including physicians, is they avoid necessary care as well as unnecessary care. So the question is, are you actually causing harm by financially penalizing people for making those bad decisions? Are there better ways? I think you need to do something about the behavior. It's not acceptable the way it is. We need to motivate the elephant and the rider that and the path that they're walking on. But the way we're doing it this way is probably not going to be efficacious. I mean, what do you think, Logan?
So what do you say to the Medicaid patient that comes in twice a month for a cold?
You know what? It's tough because you can tell the Medicaid patient, don't come in for this cold.
Because it's free if they come in the ER.
But yeah. The problem is the zero tolerance on it. What if you made it like, you know, you can do it once in a year?
Well, see,
because that's reasonable.
Yeah, but even then, like a Medicaid population is just doing what they're incentivized to do. Right. They can't go see urgent care easily. Mm-hmm. They're going
to
have COVID.
Because I know someone on Medicaid that goes in like once a week to the ER.
Who knows?
For stupid things.
Who knows those people?
Because it's free.
But
and
why
if he goes
you?
And sees a real doctor, it costs him $100.
Why wouldn't you do that?
I mean, I'm saying like in Georgia, can't Blue Cross Blue Shield be like, you know what? Everybody gets one exemption, right?
Yeah.
We're just trying to cut the bloat in the system. I feel like people would be okay with that.
You get one exemption, but then again, then once that exemption's done, it's still a problem. Now, I actually want
to go to the ER more than one time a year.
You have a quota. I have to say this, like I'm glad that Blue Cross is doing this because what's gonna happen is we're gonna have an experiment where we're gonna see what happens with a middle class insured working population that has Blue Cross Blue Shield of Georgia. And we're gonna see if it actually improves outcomes and improves behavior if they measure the right things. If it does, then there's something about human nature that we've learned. If it doesn't, it tells us that the law of unintended consequences has kicked in and people are avoiding care or they're screw-ups. The other thing is they have this doctor panel, not a death panel, but a doc panel that reviews the cases. So who are these guys? Are they doing a good job? Can you appeal? Those kind of things.
When's the last time you used the ER?
The time I...
4 years ago?
This thing
happened. When's the last time you used the ER?
I had a concussion.
When?
In high school.
So it's been since high school?
Since high school, yeah.
I haven't been in 3 years, so
yeah,
I think an exemption would work.
I don't think we can extrapolate our own, you know, bullshit lifestyles to the rest of the world. There are people with serious disease.
I was on TRICARE, so it was free.
Oh, you on TRICARE? That's you're a communist. Also, thank you for your service.
Judy Mayer says the problem is everyone thinks they are dying, especially if they don't get a pillow. You can't tell someone they don't need to come in because they demand care. No one stands up to these bully patients who use and abuse the ER.
Okay, you know what? That's a perspective that is not invalid. We
bully
see
patients.
This all the time, the bully patient.
Yeah.
You know, Teddy Roosevelt had the bully pulpit.
He stood on the bully patient, yeah.
Yeah, he stood on the bully patient and spoke softly and carried a big syringe. So This is the thing about that. Yes, there is abuse. Yes, we need better education. Yes, all those things are true, but there is a bigger, better way probably to do this. And again, that one idea with the triage where you're giving people a choice up front and saying, if you make, you know, here, both choices will lead probably to health. You're not gonna be in danger, but one is a more financially and also systematically, logistically valid choice.
Jody says, Kaiser tried this in the 1990s, and in response, Virginia passed a law preventing insurance companies from putting disincentives to use the ED in place.
Sorry, read that again for me?
So says Jody says, Kaiser tried this in the 1990s,
and
in response, Virginia passed a law preventing insurance companies from putting disincentives to ED use in place.
So this is exactly...
So it's nothing new.
What, it's not new, and it leads into this comment by John Meister on the last version of this. You can't address the ER problem without addressing COBRA and EMTALA. You have to give paramedics, EMTs, and nurses authority to turn away when appropriate. Okay, John, so this is a great point. So what EMTALA is, it basically says you cannot turn someone away from the ER who admits acutely and so on. And it's more complicated than that, but that's basically the gist of it. Should we be giving nurses, triage people, paramedics, EMTs the power to make those decisions and turn people away? I'm gonna tell you right now, people will die. People will die because they, as much as I love paramedics and EMTs, they do not, in some cases that's perfect, but there are nuanced cases where people will die of a missed dissection, of a missed stroke, of a missed, of other things that it takes years of residency and training to actually appropriately catch. And that's why a lot of the times it's very hard to know whether something is bad. Now, what would be great is a 24-hour urgent care that isn't as high staffed as an ER and high acuity, but can make those triages, or a primary care doc who at least you can have a phone or a telehealth visit with at night and say, do I need to go to the ER for this, or something that can wait? Because you know me, doc, like you are my regular caregiver. You know that either I'm full of shit about this particular symptom or this is something that's worrisome for me, right?
Well, my wife, who's a nurse, told me to go into the ER like 2 years ago in the middle of the night when I was super sick. And she was like, listen, you've been sick for 3 weeks, whatever, just go in. So I was kind of one of these patients. But a medical professional had told me to go, my wife, because she was worried about me. Because she told me to go because she thought we had the good insurance. But she didn't realize she had the good insurance. Back then, we were just engaged. I was on Obamacare. So this visit ended up costing $1,500.
There you go.
I had to write a letter that said, no, my wife, who's a nurse, I added a fake doctor. I was like, this guy signed off on it. Like, everybody's telling me, Tom, you're dying. You got to go to the ER. And I got out of paying that hospital group and that doctor.
Oh, wow. Oh, you got out of paying it.
Yeah, I wasn't about to pay that.
I didn't get out
of
paying
it. If I get a referral for the ER, it's cheaper and they'll cover it.
Yeah. So they have, look, there are incentive ways. So if you go through the regular channels, you may get a cheaper deal. So that might incentivize that. But I think going bankrupt because you made a bad decision once is probably not a great way to take care of people. And it's going to, again, you're going to disincentivize people. Now, again, this problem is huge. I'm not endorsing people going to the, look, we ought to teach people about coughs and colds and flus. It's very hard to do, right? It's a big country and there's all levels of socioeconomic stuff and education, et cetera. But we should open up access to primary care so that this is less of a problem.
Todd says, my insurance has pretty much already done this. The copay is $400 for ER visits.
Right?
That was mine under Obamacare.
That was mine.
$400 for.
And here's the thing. I had this head wound, just stitched up, got my shot, and was trying to shuffle out the door. And the woman grabbed me and is like, we need you to pay, you know, $100 right now, and then we're gonna bill the insurance for the rest.
Yeah.
And so I'm like fumbling with my wallet. I'm all alone because my wife's home with the kids, and she's like, you bonk your head, you work it out, all right? Typical doctor, walk it off. Wait, are you having double vision? Is there amnesia? Did you lose consciousness? No.
A $400 copay is basically, did you remember that article that said that 70% of Americans don't have access to $400 cash?
I didn't see that. That's amazing.
70% of Americans don't have access to $400 in the event of an emergency.
Wow.
So that's basically already a disincentive structure right there.
Yeah, right. Well, that's why the Medicaid patient would go to the emergency department. It is the easiest and most accessible, and they will always see you. They will not turn you away. I've had urgent cares. I mean, people will turn you away.
What do you think about urgent cares?
I think urgent cares, when done right, they fill an important niche, right? Same with retail clinics. They fill an important niche. Convenience, access, and reliability when done right, urgent care can be great. But anybody who works hospital medicine or emergency department sees the limitations of urgent care when it hits, you can't do certain studies. Yeah. The very complex stuff gets difficult. The simple stuff is great, and we would much rather. And man, when they were seen in urgent care instead of coming to the emergency department, that was a huge relief. Mm. But direct admissions from urgent cares are relatively rare for me. In other words, coming from an urgent care and being admitted to the hospital, usually because they would then send them right to the emergency department. Okay. Yeah, so it's always, there's better ways to do this stuff, but it fills an important niche. Now, what I think is a little tricky are freestanding emergency departments. Mm. These are ERs that are for profit, and mostly in Texas, I think, where it's legal. And these, they staff up and they advertise like they're a full ER, but I have heard very mixed things. So some people say it's great, it allows access, they do a lot of primary care, et cetera, and they don't worry about it because they're for profit, so they like the churn. Yeah. But others have said they're very health 1.0, fee-for-service driven, they don't really have the level of acuity that they advertise, et cetera. So if you know or work with a freestanding ER in Texas, let us know what your thoughts are, because I am minimally educated on that subject and I'd love to learn more.
Nancy says, try being in the hood at 4 a.m. with someone with a foot pain for 2 weeks and we tell them they don't need an ambulance.
It's impossible because we don't have the power to do that. Now, an EMT, a paramedic could make that assessment, but it's gonna be very difficult and you're gonna end up getting shot.
Someone said, please address, you can never get in to see your doctor. The only choice is the ED.
This is a huge piece, access, and it comes back.
Yeah, it's like you call and it's like, hey, 3 months from now,
No.
I told you that's why I picked my primary care physician. Because she had just gotten her license back for selling drugs to her family. And so she had no way that I could be seen that day, and all the other ones were 3 to 4 weeks.
Well, Zee, can you explain that? Because I have no idea why.
This is way before I met you,
3 month wait.
Okay, so as you know, there is this mythology, which has a lot of basis in truth, that there is a shortage of primary care and doctors in this country. Now, there's a shortage of appointments. And some of that is because we're not really geared up to actually take care of these kind of things well in this country, but there's a lot of excess capacity in hospitals and specialty clinics and things like that. So it's all just mismatched. So if we actually put our resources where it was required, which is great preventative primary care, and I would vote for team-based primary care like what we had at Turntable. We saw our patients same day. They came in. That's why they avoided ER. They didn't have to wait 3 weeks. Now, towards the end, we got so busy that we were starting to push weights out, and I saw that as a big problem. We needed to figure out how to do it more efficiently and leverage our health coaches and that kind of thing a little bit better, but it's very, very hard. It's very hard to do. That's why there are big, long waits. It's not because they don't want to see you. Yeah. Now, in this freaking city of Las Vegas, they will do a wallet biopsy before they agree to even see you. They want to know what your insurance is, and if you have crappy insurance, they will push your weight out. If you have good insurance...
My wife's experienced this.
Exactly.
I always offer to pay cash, always.
Yeah, I do too.
As a bait and switch, and then I'll get there and be like, by the way, here's my insurance.
Yeah.
but it's Obamacare, yeah, so...
It's fun with brutal. That. It's brutal, and I understand why they're doing that, because they have to survive, because financially in this town, the reimbursement rates are so low, it's impossible to survive. What are some other good comments here?
Patrick Cox says, am I on acid here? Logan is actually this talkative. Never seen him say two words, and here he is talking his ass off.
He's a professional patient, you guys.
He's
the guy who...
I grew up on a military base, so you just go to the ER for a cold, and they didn't look at you twice. Because there are there's not that many emergencies.
And military docs weigh in, military nurses weigh in. I've heard this quite a bit. They see a totally different spectrum of disease. Mm. And they do a lot of the primary care stuff. In the or more urgent settings and it's interesting, and I think having that perspective is important. I think as a physician, what really hurts us, and EMTs and paramedics and EMS and emergency nurses, is seeing the misuse of emergency, and it really resonates with us. The problem is, again, what's the solution? And I think we need a multi-pronged solution. The socioeconomic stuff has to be addressed. The primary care lack has to be addressed. The actual interoperability, so being able to share data across the system, has to be addressed. So you know what's been going on with a patient, and you can call their primary and go, no, it's cool, you don't need to be seen. Having the ability to do that, changing some regulation, maybe modifying EMTALA, but being careful to protect the patient, right? But I think when an insurance company says, this is what we're gonna do, it makes me nervous, because they're using a big stick that is very crude, and they're not clinicians, and that's the biggest problem. And it's one more erosion of clinician autonomy.
Lara says, the last time I was in the ER was 6 years ago, and I was sent there from urgent care, ended up being diagnosed with ulcerative colitis. Thank goodness that urgent care recognized their limitations.
Yeah. Here's the thing. When you don't know what you don't know in medicine, you are deadly dangerous. And this is a big concern across the spectrum of care. So when you meet a paramedic who doesn't know what they don't know, and we've had paramedics who've gone on to medical school or nursing school, and they realize, oh, wow, I didn't know a lot about this stuff. Just like the nurses and the docs don't know a lot about in the field, you know, emergency care. So we have to respect our limits. So when urgent care, the best urgent care docs don't overstep and they understand when to hand off. But it is tricky and it's a gray area, and that's part of the art of medicine. It really is. What do we got here?
Let's see. Deagle Wee says healthcare is a privilege, not a right.
This again.
That's going to start that combo.
It's going to start that again. You're asking the wrong question. Andrea Stone, over 25 years ago, I had severe abdominal pain for 3 days. I started vomiting bile. I went to the ER. At the triage desk, they took my vitals and would not see me in the ER. I had an HMO. I was sent to a freestanding urgent care, then sent back to the outpatient department at the original hospital for a stat abdominal ultrasound, then went home to wait for the results, and then was called and told to go to the hospital to be admitted for pancreatitis.
Wow.
Amazing. Now, here's the thing. Here's an interesting thing that this brings up. When I worked at Palo Alto Medical Foundation in Palo Alto, as part of, and I was affiliated with Stanford, what we had was we had a very robust urgent care in our clinic. So we could do studies, we could do CT scans and ultrasound. We had very good docs. They were connected to the primaries in the building and the specialists in the building. Oh my gosh, they crushed it as of urgent care. They kept people out of my hospital as a hospitalist. That was near and dear to my heart. And they were able to direct admit people without having to go to the ER, which was a huge, listen, you gotta understand for a patient, here's the thing. You diagnose pancreatitis on a CT in urgent care. Many urgent cares will then send you to the emergency department to expedite an admission. You sit in that really gross area, getting exposed to crappy germs, and you wait and wait and wait, and you know, all kinds of medical students and residents and everybody pokes at you again, and then you get admitted. How about this? If you're really a great urgent care in your staff, you can direct admit to a good hospitalist that's connected to your group with EHR that you share, where it's interoperable, and you get up to the floor and you get your care with the GI or whoever you're gonna consult, or ICU if you need it, and that is an ideal way. We saw that happen time and time again, and it was wonderful. When it didn't happen, oh my God, it was an ordeal, and especially for the patient, but also for the nurses and the docs and all the extra layers of care that you have to pay for and staff and write notes for and click boxes for. That's the thing, right? What do we got?
Holly Fuel says, this really hurts rural health in areas that have limited resources. So some of the rural health communities don't have urgent cares, things like that.
Yeah, and then the ER is your thing. But also, whatever happened to the old family doc who knew everybody, you'd call in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. Now, those days are disappearing because they don't get paid for that anymore. So we got to bring primary care back to the forefront. We've talked about this a million times, idea.
What year did doctors stop making house calls?
Oh, it's been a slow fade. There are still doctors who do it, and their whole company's starting up.
Did your dad ever do it?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, hell yeah.
I miss that idea of the doctor.
Right?
That'd be great.
That's perfect, man.
Totally. You know, and it's also the premise for every single sort of adult video.
Yeah.
You know, hi, I'm Dr. Edwards. I'm here to fix the cable. And then
he's conflating a little bit.
I'm conflating like the big
Dr. Edwards, I got a sausage pizza for you.
It's a pizza delivery doctor, which by the way, pays pretty good compared to standard 99231 low level billing.
Could you ever see house calls making a comeback?
Well, they do. They're just stupid expensive.
They're stupid expensive. The concierge docs do it.
And insurance doesn't cover it.
Insurance doesn't cover it. But like in some cases, like hospice palliative care, that is a house call. Home health, home care, that is a house call. We should bring it back, especially for people like nurse practitioners, health coaches, physician assistants.
Yeah.
They're great. And the other thing is homes, you find out a lot of shit about patients when you go to their house. You find out how dangerous it is. You find out there's drugs. You know, the other day we had a contractor in here. We're trying to retile this bathroom because we got first world problems. And he was like, hey, did I tell you the story about how I went into this Las Vegas rapper's house and the whole place stank of weed and there were women, it wasn't Snoop, it was somebody I'd never heard of. And I can't repeat it anyways because, you know, the tall guy's covered by HIPAA. It was Coolio. No, I'm kidding, I have no idea who it was. And so walked in, there was a tiger, a lynx, a fucking live lynx. And one of the rap women was like, hey, yo, you may want to watch out for Betsy because she can get rough, pointing at the lynx. This guy's like, Ina, come out to fix your tile? And he ends up with a tiger. So what you see in the house actually has a lot of bearing as to what's going on with the patients, but we don't go into homes anymore. We don't see our patients in their sort of native environment, and we're missing a big piece. When they're in a hospital gown with their ass hanging out, that's not who they are, right? It may be who Tom is.
I love how Z called them rap women instead
them of rap women.
I don't want to say hoes.
Instead of video hoes.
That's right, because every other city we go, in every other video, Aaron Parker says they order hella tests.
He's like, I'm going to be hella respectful right now. Rap so, women?
Rap women. So Erica Parker, who's not a rap woman, she's a rap lady, they order hella tests and waste lots of dollars on repeat exams, tests, et cetera. It's true. So all this redundancy, it costs money, and it actually can cause harm because you end up with a false positive. You end up chasing it down. It's a huge problem. I live in a sketchy place, says Mika Rutland. I have no desire to visit anyone's home to do a house call. Pretty sure I would get shot on day one. Well, so there you go. First of all, Mika, I'm going to say this. Man up or woman up, because I can't tell from your avatar. Maybe man? Can't tell. Because very tiny. Number two, no, don't man up because I don't want you to get shot. But this is a real thing, and home health people have a big problem with this safety in these homes, and they often get very little support from administration. Not always true, though. I've worked with some home health groups that are wonderful at supporting their staff. Dr. Phil, no, never mind. And in fact, I should never read a comment that begins with Dr. Phil. What the fuck am I thinking, Linda Howard? Tammy O'Lion. Isn't there an increase in house calls by nurse practitioners that do IVs for hangovers and viruses? Yeah, but those are fee for service. Those are cash pay. So like the Hangover Heaven bus here, they'll do a house call to your hotel on the strip.
And they'll it's like be $400.
Right. Yeah. And then they're stripper nurses. So literally they have women who are dressed like strippers who provide the IV.
Yeah.
Now see, I have a problem with that because it objectifies women. Unless they had male strippers that do the same thing, which then it's cool.
Yeah.
Because then you got like the Thunder from Down Under, and like they're coming with like a 14 gauge, and they're just like, unch, 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 unch. Do you believe in love after love? You know, with the thong.
What do you think about video visits?
Video visits I have a mixed feelings about. I think they're great. They're very convenient for people who have a relationship with a provider. Okay. If you don't have that relationship, they can be tricky because you're going to miss nuance and stuff. So I am for and against them. It depends on what you're talking about and how you're using them. What else we got here?
I did one time and it was useless. Telehealth.
Yeah, and then look, Joel Lozoya says, what's your opinion on Teladoc? My first opinion on Teladoc is, Teladoc, we're looking for sponsors for the show, so if you want to sponsor the show, I'm going to say right now, I think Teladoc is amazing. The idea that you pay a very small copay to have a one-on-one access with a real doctor who can write orders and potentially communicate with your own EHR, that's dope. Now, if you refuse to sponsor the show, Teladoc, I will give the con, which is you don't have a relationship with those docs, they make mistakes, the laws around the country are still tricky about how you bill, and either there's over or under prescribing with the telehealth piece. Now, again, these are not entirely cut and dry. They're nuanced, and we can have whole discussions on telehealth, which we will have. I think there are lots of promise there.
Susanna says, I had to step over...
By the way, the CMO of Teladoc is a friend of mine. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Safu.
Yeah, what's up, mommy? Call me Bob. No, better yet, Teladoc me, you know what I'm saying?
Susanna says, I had to step over piles of dog poop in the house when I did home health. No wonder his wound would never heal.
Dude, and
that's the big problem with home health is people's homes are gross.
Yo, yeah. First person to name the American hookworm, the scientific name in the comments, gets a big ass thumbs up and a shout out from Z-Dog. So start commenting. What is the name of the hookworm that you get by stepping on dog feces?
Obama.
Oh, my God, yeah. Don't pull out the severed Trump head next, dude, because Z-Dog doesn't need to go out like that.
I thought we eradicated hookworm. We still got hookworm?
No, we got hookworm, especially in the South. Hookworm. It's a big thing in the South,
from what I remember. No, that's racist, Z.
You're right.
You seen a tapeworm, Z?
I'm racist against white people.
That's
what?
Why they
you seen a tapeworm?
I've seen a tapeworm.
Do you know that's why they used to think people in the South were lazy, because everybody had hookworm?
Yeah, they were all anemic. They were all anemic. Their hematocrit was like 21. I'm still like, ringworm. No, it's not ringworm. It's not ringworm, Melinda and Jennifer. It's not ringworm. And I may be even wrong on this. In fact, I'm going to Google it while we're talking.
Ascaris lubricodis?
You're making that shit up. Rebecca says that? Uh-huh. Hold on. I'm going to Google what I thought it was first and make sure that I'm right, because I'm remembering from medical school here. I haven't seen a case of this. Here we go.
Teladoc needs to stop prescribing antibiotics for kids. Need to actually look in ears to diagnose and swab throats to DX strep. to diagnose drop.
Well, that's the thing. So the argument against telehealth is that there's a lot of stuff that you really need to touch patients, but then there's a lot of stuff that you don't. So it really, really depends. Okay. What other comments do we have on the worm issue?
Ascaris.
Uh-huh. Keep going.
Blah, 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 blah. Anclostymo dudodomdo.
Go away. Keep coming. Give me the hookworm that you get in your foot.
Pinworm.
No, it's not pinworm.
Difflatium latum.
For those who don't understand pinworm, pinworm is often over in the perianal area. They're little tiny worms. He's laughing because he's a muggle, and he also has pinworm. The way pinworm works is you can diagnose it with the scotch tape test, Logan.
Roundworm?
Do you know what that is? You put a piece of scotch tape right on the butthole.
Shigella?
And you go, and then you look and see if there are little worms on there. It's not Shigella. Shigella is a bacteria, not a parasitic.
Oh, my mom had parasite. To do
that. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Cestodiasis?
No.
I'm great at medical words, by the way.
I'm just going to, did anyone, Tom,
say. Zoontonic?
Did anyone say Necator Americanus?
I did not say
that. It's pronounced Americanus.
That is a species of hookworm, a type of helminth commonly known as New World hookworm. Now, the question I want to make sure is, do you get it by stepping on poo-poo? And that's what I'm trying to figure out. Hold on. The most effective, yeah, here it is, I'm right! The most effective prevention technique is not to walk barefoot in areas where hookworm is common and where there may be contamination in the soil. Like the patient's home, I'm bringing it back, with the piles of steaming poo. You're welcome, world. Z-Dog knows a thing or two, and then he knows a lot of nothing about it. Remember we were talking about knowing your limits? My limits are many.
Amy Van Balen says, I already said it.
So. Did she? Amy?
Damn.
Amy, thank you. Amy Van Balen?
You win a slidey pin.
You are awesome. You win a slidey pin that I don't have any. But, yeah, no, yeah. No, we'll send you a slidey pin.
Also, Z's
message me,
to
I'll give you a slightly funny
little cookie dinner. I can promise that.
I will leave a voicemail on your answering machine, which we know we all still have, Tom Einiber, an answering machine with a tape.
If Z-Dog, you live in or around the Austin area, me and Z are going to be there next week, so we'll see you.
This is true. This is true. We're going to be speaking at the America's Health Insurance Plan Conference, where it is the biggest lobbying group for insurance. We're going to infiltrate that shit. We're going to talk about the Blue Cross thing to their face. And we're also going to raise the word about Health 3.0 and how they can support it.
Word.
Sometimes you got to break into the system, the system. Number next.
Preach it, Z.
Locals.
Yep.
Show up at our hotel. Mm-hmm. We're going to throw a party, though.
Hell yeah, pizza party.
He's going to be backing me up.
That's right.
Where the hell's my phone?
How am I supposed to get home?
Hospice RN, been in homes with chickens inside, says Beth Hosek.
Oh, God.
Gloved and gowned before I ever went in and took nothing in with me. That's a good idea. So this is the thing, guys. Z in Austin, Catherine Porter, yes, ma'am, next week, end of next week. At Kaiser, our ER copay went from $5 to $50 from abuse. Yeah, because copays will stop abuse, but it will also disincentivize normal use. So at Turntable, we got rid of all copays because we wanted people to see their primary care any fucking time they wanted. So if you want to be seen, man, we want to see you when you're well so you can stay well. We want to know about your life. We want to make it a relationship, not a freaking transaction. I don't know, yo. What do you think?
My insurance has a free appointments for preventative care.
And that's how it should be. That's how it should be. That's one thing Obamacare did right. They said, let's make preventative care free and cover a certain amount. But however, it did skew the insurance market because they're not set up to do the kind of things Obamacare was asking. And honestly, Obamacare was put in place to lower the public's threshold for accepting a single-payer system, which... that crew felt was inevitable. It was inevitable. It's a conspiracy if you think that it's a bad thing. It's a brilliant scheme if you think it's a good thing. So where I lay is in the nuance, as always.
Illuminati.
That's right. My grandfather was actually a Freemason. I shit you negative, people. Like, he was like a Grand Poobah in India. He was. He had a freaking evil mustache. And he'd be like, bring them to me, you know, with a cat. He had no cat. He had two Great Danes, actually. They were really big.
Susanna says TRICARE rocks. Yes, it did.
Yeah, it did.
All right, 30 minutes in. Let's call
the code. All right, let's call the code, guys. We love you. Share this.
Jesus.
There goes our headphones. Tom has impulse control issues. Also, he keeps throwing my coaster on the ground, and then I'm looking for a coaster, and there's no coaster in the morning. I'm like, oh, I'm going to have my tea. Oh, where's my coaster at? That Heinemer? These millennials and their impulse control. All right, we out.